This is Jeff Chrisman, and I'm here today at Art Space and Untitled, visiting with the artist Mary James Ketch. Mary, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. And I thought what we might do just to get started, to help listeners get a little more familiar with the work that you do and have done, maybe hear from you just a little bit as far as the artwork that you do.
Okay. Well, I do have a hard time talking about my work because each particular piece kind of has a story behind it. So I'm more comfortable talking about each piece in particular, but I'm kind of known for doing women and abstract women, and my work is moving more towards the abstract lately. So,
oh, very good, very good. And then kind of taking a look back, just to give us a little bit of a sense of maybe where you've been and,
yeah,
and your path along that journey, maybe if I could ask you a little bit about how you got started doing artwork and if there's any particular influences or things that inspired you.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long journey. I actually have a background in filmmaking. I have a degree from OU in film and video studies, and then I went to USC and I got a master's in film production there. So that was a 3-year program, and I lived in Los Angeles for 9 years and met my husband and had a child there. And after living there for 9 years, I realized I liked watching movies and crying more than I actually liked making them. And crying for different reasons. So I moved back to Oklahoma, and at the time, we had built a house in Los Angeles through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and suddenly it was worth a lot of money, and so I was like, we can sell it and move to Oklahoma. That sounds fabulous. But after my second child was born, I started going a little bit crazy as a stay-at-home mom, and I just sort of spontaneously started painting, and I had been in school long enough to know, like, there's a book for everything.
Yeah.
I picked up a few books. I started copying things, you know, that I just saw out of catalogs. Like, I can do that. And sort of made my own progression. And after about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I showed a piece of work to a friend who kind of connected me with Fringe, the local women's art group. And I started showing with them, and they have just been really instrumental. And I've really sort of been finding my style through this process of showing my work and trying different mediums and really being a self-taught artist. But two of my favorites have always been Georgia O'Keeffe.
Oh, yeah.
And Gustav Klimt. And I just like the way that they do, their works are sort of grounded in our reality and our nature, but they combine it with abstractness. So, Georgia O'Keeffe had a teacher, Arthur Dow, who was really instrumental in her compositions, and he has written a book, and it's still available, and you can read it, and I did. and so, you know, it continues to grow, and another one I personally really love is Matisse, and especially his cutouts of women and the paper, and I was lucky enough just to visit. I was in Paris and saw some of his work there, and it's just really exciting to me. So.
Oh, wow. And I can imagine being able to see that, you know, be able to see that there would, be a really incredible experience.
Right. I saw his show when it was here in Oklahoma City, and only had a few of his cutouts, but they weren't anything like the large-scale work that was in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine that was really something. I just thinking about that. And then when you mentioned Fringe, too, and I think I've interviewed just a few folks who have some involvement in that. And it just occurred to me that, you know, I should actually ask a little bit about that as far as if you, in terms of understanding maybe, you know, why you got involved in that and, you know, what if at all, how that has contributed to your evolution as an artist or as a member of an artistic community.
Oh, definitely. I would not, you know, I don't even know if I would be doing art, honestly, to the extent that I am, if it weren't for Fringe, because, you know, I when I showed that first piece of painting, you know, I'd been painting, but it was for myself and stuff, and I showed it to a friend, and she was like, you know, you need to join this group. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. And she said, but you already are doing it. And then to be part of a group at the time, they were doing like 4 shows a year, and everybody was putting in like 2 or 3 pieces of work. And so I was able to build a resume and build confidence over like a couple of years, you know, to have like 10 shows under my belt.
Oh, yeah.
And then one of the members was like, now you're going to do a solo show. And I was like, no, I'm not. And she's like, yes, you are. So I did a solo show, and you know, they just really got the wheels in motion. And now to have this group of women who you can just sort of, you know, discuss your problems with, support each other, you know, critique your work in a way that you feel they understand you. And I do have to say, too, like, having gone to film school, which was, like, 90% men, and my teachers, you know, were just, like, I would bring in sort of female-centric movies, and they would literally roll their eyes, like,
really?
You know, but if you bring in Kubrick, sure, let's bow down. And I just feel like I'm with like-minded women, and it's just, you know, that part of it, too, is really important to me, just to have artistic friends, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you always have a show you can go to, and artist talk, and... it's just a really rich part of my life. And I've kind of, you know, gone off, besides just doing friend shows, I've gone off and started doing my own work outside of it. But it's definitely been integral to my artistic career.
Oh, yeah. Do you find in some ways that maybe having that experience, you know, doing a solo show that they, you know, that was associated with them, that that's helped you feel more confident or more comfortable?
Oh, definitely. You know, and it's just like anything, the more you do it, the more confident you feel. And, you know, a lot of it is just stepping across that line in the sand that you built for yourself. You're like, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. And someone, like, pushes you over, and you're, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And even now, like, we're doing, we're breaking up and doing smaller groups of artists in a show, but you each take on different responsibilities. And if you have never done that before, there's someone there who has, you know, tells you how it's done and holds your hand and helps give you the resources. Like, here's the media you need to contact and things like that, so.
Yeah, that's very, in fact, I was reading the other day an article about a jazz musician that was talking about why he got out and really, you know, at the end of the day, got out and played in clubs and did that day after day, because he talked about it was like being with his congregation, which I thought was kind of a neat, sort of euphemism for this, in terms of being with your people and, you know, knowing that you're understood and supported.
Well, and that's, too, I was thinking recently, because I started doing online work or working with a catalog, but I don't really get to meet the people who buy my work.
Hmm.
And so showing or having an art show, a gallery show, you know, has just, like, you get to meet the people, and you may not sell as much, but, you know, you just get that feedback, which is so important. So each part of my art practice sort of brings me something new or, you know, different.
Oh, yeah. And I was wondering, too, just as far as what, you know, what that felt like for you to do your first solo show. I didn't know in terms of maybe thoughts that you had or, you know, or any reservations or just wait, maybe looking back at that time. And
I remember thinking, like, I'll never fill the space. And then I had, like, way too much work. And at the time, too, like, I have a piece that I put in that show that's sort of now it's, like, my signature piece. Like, it's gone all, like, people, you know, it was chosen by OVAC for their 365 concept show, which they picked out, like, I don't know, X number of pieces and showed it at the Hardesty in Tulsa. And now this was a piece chosen by this catalog, and it never sold in the years. But it's sort of like you don't know at the time. I think that's what my point was going to be. You don't know at the time the pieces that are going to make it through the long haul.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it was this one particular piece. Some of the other ones were just terrible. So I guess I've learned to sort of keep things on the shelf a little bit longer. I wish I could still learn that lesson. Like, don't put everything out there right away. Like, let yourself look at it later and see what you think about it. But then again, you don't know. Sometimes you still put it out there and people are like, oh, it's my favorite. And you're like, really? I wasn't sure I liked it at all. So.
And that's interesting that you bring that up. I never even, you know, that's something that kind of has opened up my mind a little bit. It never occurred to me before that, you know, there's some sort of, I guess, that whole decision-making process.
Yes.
Or, you know, in terms of when it's, you know, when you feel like it's time.
Ready
so to speak.
Let go.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And that's another thing, like, with friends, we'll have critiques, and you can be like, I don't think it's ready, but I can't figure out what's wrong with it, you know. And they can help you. And then also, my husband is an architect, and... since I paint in my house, he's had to learn, like, I don't want criticism unless I'm asking for it, you know, but I'll have pieces in the closet, you know, and I have this one piece, you know, and I'll work on it, you know, and I'll bring it back out and work on it. And I'm like, what do you think about this, you know? And he'll say, well, some pieces are just for you there to work on.
Ah, gotcha.
You know, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, keep it in the closet or, you know, whatever, but...
Is a lot of that just really by feel? Is it something that maybe you don't necessarily have, you know, as far as empirical or factual, you know, information for that? Is it more just how you really feel about it yourself?
Yeah, and that's interesting. If something isn't working, that's where you can go back to the basics of composition or color theory or try to figure out, like, why it's not working. But for the most part, my painting is very intuitive, and you can feel it. And if it doesn't, if you're not feeling it...
Yeah.
If other people aren't feeling it either, then what's the point? But that's sort of, actually, that's been a real blessing of starting painting later on in my life and without any real agenda other than to do it, was just simply, do I like it? I wasn't, like, trying to prove anything to anybody or, you know, conform to some people's criteria. I was just simply trying to create something that I enjoyed. And that's sort of been my criteria to this day, and it's freeing. I don't have to have a reason why. I like it or I don't like it. You know, my husband came home one day and the kitchen wall was painted black. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I should have been black.
Huh. I like that. It's just something that you knew deep down inside, right?
It needs to be, yes.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, as far as just intuitively, do you find that as you have been actually practicing or creating works of art in terms of your intuitive feel mm-hmm. for things, can you see any difference there? I don't want to say, like, you know, more or better or anything like that, but just looking at how you, how you process things internally.
Yes. So growing up, I was very emotional. I was not, like, the doodler artistic kid, so it took me a long time to sort of claim this mantle of calling myself an artist, but I was very emotional and was in theater, and that's why I kind of decided to do film. And now I'm very much more in touch with the physical world. And I also think that has something to do with my pregnancies. I know that my brain changed when I became pregnant. And something about growing older, but I'm just more attuned to color and the physical world. And once you start painting or drawing, and if you do any sort of like life study drawing, you just suddenly just start, you know, observing things much more deeply. And it's been interesting to see how that painting has actually connected me to my reality more, especially if I'm doing somebody's face or drawing, you know, anything that's remotely lifelike, you know, I'll just... You know, nostrils and just completely fascinate me these days.
Yeah, that's cool. I guess you kind of look at it in a different way.
Yes.
I'm assuming when you're trying to recreate something that you've seen before.
Yeah.
You know, that you maybe have a different relationship with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's interesting. I've always been a fan of film myself, and not that this is about me, but I have interviewed a few filmmakers, but I don't think I've ever interviewed anyone that has, you know, been in that world and has worked in that world, and that
yes.
also creates visual.
Yes.
As far in terms of paintings or drawings and things like that, I'm trying to figure out exactly how to say, because I know film is art as well.
Yes, yeah.
And so I'm trying to think of the best way to express that. But I'm wondering, looking back, and I'm just taking a shot here, I wonder if in terms of your experience with creating, I don't know if you wrote screenplays or actually directed or produced
yes.
films.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering maybe if you see that there's any correlation or how maybe your experiences with that and how you saw the world
mm-hmm.
maybe have affected yeah. or translated into how you create, visual works of art.
I've always been interested in people, so most of my artwork does involve people, and does seem to have some sort of like narrative element to it. Like you feel like there is a story there, and I always do have a story in the back of my head or something I connect to it. So I actually send out a newsletter every couple weeks, and it tells the story behind the painting, and that way I am able to sort of draw on that background of my writing. And put it into succinct story behind the painting. And at first I was really sort of concerned that I didn't want to like put my story on top of somebody else's, how they're going to receive the painting.
Yeah.
But people will say, no, it just draws me deeper into the painting. And I've gotten such a good response from it that I keep doing it. So, and then the other thing is you do learn about composition and color and light and all these things, in filmmaking that do, go over to painting. I don't know why in my brain I thought it was such a different thing for a long time, because I'd never drawn or, picked up a paintbrush, but there is a lot that can cross over.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I just, you know, thinking about the intersection of those two things and how the the process with can really inform the process of the other.
And looking back on some of my student films, you know, they were like paintings. Like one film that was like 5 minutes of a static image of a couple breathing, you know.
Wow.
And it was just like, I think I was supposed to be a painter all along, and I, you know.
Now that's why. That's interesting. I like, that's like a whole different way of looking at this.
Yeah.
And I have to, I'm thinking as well, as far as you had mentioned, we were talking a little bit just in terms of, you know, looking at your evolution, you know, since you started doing, when you were doing films and then started doing visual art and then looking at, you know, kind of taking the long view with it. I'm wondering maybe how your spiritual journey. I know you mentioned that you're a celebrant as well.
Yes.
And so I thought maybe if you wanted to share a little bit about that.
Okay.
Maybe kind of get an idea of maybe how that relates to, you know, some of the works of art that you create.
Okay.
Or if there is an intersection there somewhere.
Oh, there's definitely an intersection there. So I'm also a big reader. And one of my favorite subjects is evolutionary psychology. And, you know, the evolutionary history of art, evolutionary history of religion, and they definitely intersect. If you look past the past few hundred years, if you look way back in history, art was always associated with ritual. You know, you wore special clothes, you wore special markings, you played special music, you got these special flowers to create this special moment in time for your ritual.
Wow.
And so art was always associated with ritual. And I think it's only recently we've thought about it in other terms. Because I like to look way far in the past.
Oh, yeah.
So my celebrant work, which for those who don't know, is that I perform weddings and funerals and baby blessings. And that is another thing. It came up at the same exact time as my painting, as far as, like, a friend asked me to do her wedding. And I was like, how do you do that? Like, I'm not a minister, I'm not a judge. And she's like, well, here's how you get your minister credentials through the internet. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just realized with my background in performance and writing that it was so much fun for me to do. And more importantly, there was a need for it. Because, like, I thought I was going to do, like, one wedding and that was going to be it. But then I had another friend, and she was in the Episcopal Church, and I won't say her name, so I guess she won't mind me divulging the details, but she was older, she was 60 years old, and she'd been divorced twice, and she said, you know, my priest won't marry me without 6 months of premarital counseling and approval from the bishop. And I was like, I'll marry you. And I'd been raised in the Episcopal Church, so I knew the whole the Episcopal ceremony. So it was, which was completely different from the first wedding I did. And then I did a friend's father's funeral, and he also he'd been raised in Church of Christ. That was very much part of who he was. And he was also gay, which does not go with Church of Christ. And you know, my friend, I was like, I realized that there's just such a need in Oklahoma for somebody who's ecumenical, and I'm very ecumenical. Like, I kind of look through the world through very fuzzy glasses. Like, everything kind of looks the same, you know, to me. Like, I understand all points of view, almost all points of view. I understand where people are coming from, and in most cases, and I've always had a history, like I said, with evolutionary psychology, and culture and religion and our biology all evolved together. Like the religion and culture evolved to support our biology, and our biology created this culture and religion, and they're meant to be supported. And even people who have fallen away from the religion of their youth still want these ceremonies. They still want to be married. It's still meaningful to them somewhere.
Yeah.
Or we still want to celebrate the life of somebody who died, even if it may be out of a religious context. And I do outside of religious context, but I also do interfaith and Christian, and I've done Buddhist. I mean, I'll do what anybody asks me.
Yeah.
And I'll say, like, look, I'm just a person. I perform ceremonies. I'm not a priest, but I'll be happy to try to incorporate what's meaningful and important to you. And in that sense, I really think of myself kind of as a documentary filmmaker, because, you know, I just get to know them really well, what's important to them, things that are meaningful to them, and then I write it and combine it in a way that is meaningful to them. So
yeah, that's very, you know, it's, and I'm getting the sense as I'm talking to you, and I'm more important than not talking, but listening to you, that you have integrated, and there again, I'm just, yeah. I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself or taking a leap, but it kind of feels to me like that you have integrated these, and there again, I'm hesitant to use the words parts of yourself.
No, because you are one unified whole. Yes. And so I kind of think of my sort of mission as creating sacred space. And so I can do that through a ceremony, or I can do that with a piece of artwork. And when I realize that most people who buy my artwork are going to put it in their home. And so I want it to be, beautiful and healing. And it's kind of like, well, how do you do that? I mean, it's not like emitting gamma rays or whatever. But, you know, to me, if it feels that way to me, so my artwork isn't like confrontational, violent. It's just, to me, something that feels healing and beautiful. And I think too that humans are pretty good at finding their own medicine. So I think that's one reason that I do paint women on couches, because as a mom of three kids and a woman, you're like constantly running around, and just to see an image of a woman relaxing is
very
is medicine for you. And so I think that's what I do. I paint my own medicine.
That's I have to take just a moment and kind of sort of take that in. That is, it's interesting, because the other thing I was getting a sense of through listening to you is that, you know, if I refer to Mary James Ketch as an artist, I almost feel like in some ways, yes, you do what an artist does. You're an artist. But then again, I also get this sense that there's so much more to you than that. And I wonder, too, sometimes, do you find that people sometimes try to maybe put you in just one category? If maybe they love your art, and so they see you. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just wonder your thoughts about that as far as maybe.
I don't think people do that as much as I felt the need to say, well, what is my identity? And a lot of times I think, the artist identity is I think more important to me psychically for whatever reason. Even though my family would be like, yeah, but it doesn't bring you any money. So people only want to ask you what you do. It's interesting to me, which one do I say first? Yeah. Or do I only bring up the artist and not say the celebrant? I used to have two different websites. My art website is maryjamesketch.com, and my celebrant website used to be maryketch.com. So it was like slightly different. But I changed my celebrant website. But yeah, I thought about integrating them, but I'm like, well, people aren't really looking for a wedding and a painting. But I have actually had clients come and buy a painting, and it was inspired by them. And that's a wonderful thing too, is that I always say, like, the celebrant work gets me out of the house, gets me meeting people who have really interesting stories, and it does inspire some of my artwork.
Yeah, and I have to wonder too, maybe the stories that you hear and the people that you meet, is that part of your would you say that's part of your medicine as well? That's something that's healing for you as
well? Because especially for weddings, but even funerals, I do a lot more weddings, that's why I talk about them more, but for weddings, I have the couple answer a questionnaire that's really long and extensive. And I usually meet them first, like in a coffee shop, and I'll ask them a little bit about their story, and they'll tell me, and kind of depending on how extroverted they are, they'll tell me more or less. But once you ask them these stories and they're not seeing you face to face, when they're just writing it, people just have a tendency to be so much more open. And every time, that's my favorite part of my job as a celebrant, is reading these questionnaires, because people are really beautiful, and you just don't get the opportunity to see that when you're just sitting down for coffee and how's the weather,
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely restores my faith in humanity and, the idea of marriage. I've been married 20 years, and it's always kind of brings me back to that moment where you realize that other people can make you a better person. Another person can make you rise up and sort of become the best version of yourself.
Oh, yeah. And I know sometimes it's, sometimes being with people, you know, can be sometimes the most challenging and difficult things. It can also be the most healing, and it's in everything in between, you know, it's in trying to figure that out. I wonder too, and it's, and I'm almost hesitant to even refer to this. I mean, I don't believe that it's separate. And I know we talked a little bit before I met you here today, you know, just as far as the spiritual journey and looking at that, you know, as everything is a unified whole. I'm really wondering if there's anything you could speak to in terms of, you know, of your spiritual journey. I mean, using the, that phrase that maybe has where you find yourself today and who you find yourself today.
Yeah.
Maybe speaking a little bit if there's anything you wanted to share about that.
Well, like I said, I grew up in the Episcopal Church. But, you know, I was always kind of, I felt removed from it. And I started reading Joseph Campbell. That was, you know, part of, in my 20s, and he's a writer of mythology, and kind of looking at the universal stories that show up across all religions. And he's written a series of books called Masks of God, you know, saying that God exists everywhere, but it's kind of like the masks that he, she, it, the universe wears is that culture's interpretation of God. And so I kind of just returned to that we all have this, not all of us, but most of us have a desire to feel connected to something beyond ourselves. You know, we have a desire to have transcendence, and if that's a universal evolutionary need. And I was like, well, if there's an evolutionary need for it, then it must be good for us.
Oh, yeah.
and that part, I just try not to question it as much. Obviously, I don't get in a lot of debates with theologians because I would be smashed to the ground. But, you know, my husband once said to me, he said, you know, I could define my religion in one sentence and you, it would take a book. And I said, well, actually, several books, I think. But if I had to distill it into one word, it would be love. And that's in all the religions, you know.
Yeah.
Caring, kindness, compassion. These are elements of our life.
Oh, yeah. And it sounds to me like the way, you know, that you share these stories, you know, through your art and with your art, I should say, and along with it, and in the work itself. And then just as you say, you know, being with people during these really transitional times that are both, you know, I don't want to say that they're, I don't want to use the words positive and negative because I think it's all part of the life process.
Right, yeah.
But it really, I get that sense that that's really a big part of who you are, that,
yes.
you know, that you show that love,
yeah.
you know, towards yourself, towards your family, towards mm-hmm. the community,
yeah.
through integrating all these things.
It's, well, and I know we connected over that book, Loving What Is.
Yes.
So you've
yes.
read that, right?
Yes. But in fact, I've been a huge Byron Katie fan.
Yes.
I actually got started you know, reading her stuff. It's probably been, my goodness, it's probably been over, I want to say over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my first sort of becoming more familiar, you know, with the concept of non-duality and using a lot of those, you know, as far as the questioning.
Right.
You know, constantly
yes.
questioning, you know, what is it, you know, all these stories that we, I just love the way she kind of breaks that down.
Yeah.
I've watched a few of her videos where she's working with people that mm-hmm. are really,
really
stuck.
And it's transformational.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so she's been, I love her work, too, and it's just, like, really, you know, it's like not questioning whether something's good or bad, not being so emotionally engaged in it, and just sort of being present and not saying that, oh, this is a negative event. It's just an event, and it's happening, and I just have found her work, too. Like, if I find myself stuck in some sort of, like, negative mental cycle where I'm having an argument with somebody who's not even there, but they're in my head, you know, I'll pull out one of those worksheets, I'll fill it out, and
oh,
she
wow.
can just, you know, flip the switch in my brain into where 1 minute I was mad as hell, and the next I'm starting to laugh, you know, I'm like, what magic is that? What crazy magic is that?
Just turns it around,
yes,
doesn't it?
It's, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, her personal story just intrigues me. I understand that, you know, she was really struggling with mm-hmm. chronic depression, and, you know, it got to a point where things had gotten really, really bad in her own life, and that there was just some very, I don't know, it may be a little off-putting as far as what ended up happening, and it kind of turned it around for her. But it was, you know, she had to really almost, I guess, hit bottom, so
yes,
to speak,
yeah.
in terms of where she found herself and
right.
not caring for herself personally and just
yeah.
really in a really dark place.
Yeah.
And that suddenly, just out of that, she emerged
right.
into, you know, to this openness and vastness of realizing that it didn't, you know, she didn't have to necessarily believe the story she was telling
right.
herself.
Well, I think a really important part of her work is this self, like, not being so confident that you have all the answers.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's just been huge in every part of my relationship, you know, or anything. You know, oh, people are like, I'm right. You know, I'm like, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. This is what I'm thinking, or I think this is right. I'm going to try to do this. But I don't feel the need to impose my will on other people. Because you know what? Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And it just makes you open and receptive and sort of that don't know beginner's mind.
Oh, yeah.
That isn't so much of, you know, Eastern religion, too. Just like, just be open to what comes. And it's actually very joyful and freeing to live that way.
And I have to, and it sounds very much like that really influences and really, you know, it's, you know, that really, you know, colors the way that you, it sounds like that's the way that you approach all these things that you do, that's, you know, you're not, that, you know, you're open
yes.
to how, you know, wherever, you know, meeting people where they are and not necessarily
yeah.
needing to have it be maybe the way you think it is
yes.
or that your thoughts about yeah. it maybe are, yeah.
And I think, too, like, I don't think that's part of my essential nature. I think I was very much a planner and a know-it-all.
I can identify. I can definitely identify.
Because I decided when I was going to go to film school, I decided that when I was 16. So I, you know, the next 10, you know, I did all the steps
yeah.
to get into USC. People were like, you can't get into USC. I got in, and I was like, well, I don't understand how you become a film director, but I'll figure that out when I get there. And I kept asking. I never figured it out other than, people said, you know, if you write a screenplay and sell it, maybe you can attach yourself as a director. Or I have friends who just went out and found the funding that route. And, you know, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I can edit this. Sorry
okay.
about that.
I'll just wait a second.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm old enough now to realize that most of my plans do not work out.
Yeah.
And that most of the best things, you know, that have happened to me were serendipitous, and just, you know, to relax my plans a little bit and try to go more with the flow. It's probably to my benefit, and I've looked too and said, oh, this wasn't what I planned, therefore it cannot be good, and said, no, this is a wonderful gift. If you let go of the fact that you did not plan it. So that is how I try to approach my life. It doesn't always work out. But.
Oh yeah, easier said than done sometimes,
yes,
isn't
yes.
it? It's, yeah, and that's, and I have to wonder too. I mean, it'd be interesting to know kind of where you maybe thought you would be versus where you find yourself today. You know, maybe if you go back 20 years.
Yeah, see, which age do you want to start
yeah.
with? You know,
did that kind of change over time? Do you think just as your life experiences were changing, maybe your vision?
Oh yes, definitely. And I think part of becoming an adult is realizing, oh, you have to create a new dream for yourself. And for a long time, I tried to compare my life in Oklahoma to my life in Los Angeles. And I just realized, you know, like I would say, oh, this is as good as.
Oh.
And now I'm like, my life here is so much better because of what I want, you know,
yeah.
of what I want, not what I think I should want.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I had a teacher one time, one of my spiritual teachers that I've, you know, studied with for years, that he always used to use the saying, it's like, you know, he's trying to convey that we're already here, we just don't realize it. So he used to always say, you know, you don't need to take a bus to Detroit if you're already
yes.
in Detroit. And
yes.
so I kind of wonder sometimes if we just let ourselves be here and let things be the way that they are, that maybe it doesn't really need to be another way that we think it
I know,
does.
Yes. And
yeah.
another interesting thing, too, is seeing these little parts of my life that I thought I kind of maybe left behind in my past actually come together now.
Interesting.
You know, like I said, like the performing, you know, I thought I wasn't going to perform once I left OU, and here I am again, performing in front of people as
yeah.
far as my celebrant work comes, or the writing, or artwork, or just little things that sort of pop up, and you're like, oh, that's why I did that, or, you know, maybe it wasn't planned, but it feels that way, and I go for what feels good, so.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because I think sometimes if we just let the, you know, and I realize that I've gotten into, you know, I've had people say to me before when I've talked about that, have said, well, you know, if you just let things happen, or, you know, let things happen the way they're going to happen, does that mean that you're not supposed to try? And I've, you know, and it's never that I've really said that. It's just that I realize we can, it's almost like I have to think we can make our best efforts and let our intuition, you know, kind of follow our heart to a certain degree, and realize at the same time we do have to plan, we do have to have a logical side.
Yeah.
But I wonder sometimes if we're just so attached to the outcome that we think should happen, that
yeah.
maybe is where we find ourselves kind of struggling some, that if we maybe do the best we can do with what we have, and
yes.
just be open
yeah.
to letting these things kind of happen.
Yeah. And I think I'm probably more into shorter term planning now.
Yeah.
Sort of life vision, just, you know, what do I want to do for the next year? And then I've been doing a really good, trying to like write in a paper diary, you know, paper calendar, you know, sort of a sentence for the day, or, you know, just kind of what happened or my little plans. And then going back in the year and saying, you know, what worked out, what didn't, or what was serendipitous, you know, what did I enjoy? And
Do you tend to, when you look back, do you tend to find some things that really were serendipitous that you just really weren't expecting?
Yeah. And that's sort of the fun surprises to look back on. And
And you sound very at peace with it. I just, like I said, I've only known you for a very short time, but it's I'm not sensing necessarily that there was a lot, you know, that there's been a lot of...
Well, the knock on wood.
Yes.
That's concrete, but my life is pretty good. Yeah.
Well, that's a blessing. Yes. It is. And I really appreciate this. I really appreciate you being willing to talk about these different parts of yourself, even though it's you, but essentially it's neat to really be able to hear how all these things have integrated together. And for you just to take some time to share with us, you know, who is Mary James Ketch, and hearing a little bit about your story.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
I definitely honor you taking the time to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.